You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, I think we're on.
Are we? I can't tell. You know, I'm sitting here getting an eBay notification that says, I just bought your thing, and you told me if I did a buy right now, your shipping would be free, but it automatically charged me for shipping.
So somebody's complaining to you right now as we started the show?
Yeah, I think what he's saying is, hey, dude.
Why did you charge me shipping? You told me.
I didn't charge him shipping. The software did.
Well, nothing's perfect. You know, nothing's perfect. Tell him you're busy. You'll take care of it. I mean, what are you going to tell him?
Yeah, right. That.
So
anyway, hold on. Let me send this to him. I'm sorry.
This is compelling. This is compelling radio podcasting.
You know, I tell you what's happened is because and I hate to do it, dude. I hate to do it in the first 2 minutes. Am I going to do it in the first 2 minutes? But because of the untimely death of my brother.
Oh, yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Okay.
And then my step grandpa, who died 2 weeks ago, both of them had copious amounts of things. Now, obviously, my brother. As some people know, he never got married, never had any kids, but he still had a giant house full of, big three bedroom twin home full of stuff.
And I saw
house now.
I saw lots of pictures of the vast amount of collectibles.
And then my step grandpa, he had a farm that's been in the family since 1852. So he's got 170 years worth of stuff.
Oh, my. You probably didn't throw much out.
Yes, my old lady's like, dude, you need to start getting rid of some of this stuff. So I just started getting it, but I'm not a good
eBayer.
You know, I do a lot of stuff on GunBroker, which is a whole different type of place. But I'm not. Well, first of all, I'm a buyer.
Is that on the dark web?
No, that's arms list. But let's not even go there, dude, because you won't even understand it. You know what I mean? You won't even understand it. So, obviously, I didn't realize. So, I just had to tell this dude back with my phone because I have my address. I use my thumbprint to sign in because I don't know what my eBay address is on my desktop. So, anyway. But, back to reality. I think this is my 102nd or 103rd episode.
At least that 103. Doesn't matter.
It is the second episode. Hey, it's the second episode. We have a guest, right?
I know. I mean, I was completely taken by surprise. Hey,
the difference is this guest, unlike last week, I mean, that dude was a loyal fan, almost like family when we started the podcast. Definitely family when we got done with it. He was an Arkansas Undertaker that knew a dude that worked for the guy that embalmed Elvis.
Bingo.
So the only reason why I put that out there is because our guest today, I know from a whole different world, the Twitter world, the knife making world, the crazy tattooed mill Twitter world. And I threw a line out there. He said, I'll be on your podcast. And a lot of people say they'll be on the podcast, but they chicken out, as you know.
Yeah. Shane. Yeah.
And so right here live from out east is Joey Knuckles. And come on in, Joey. Tell us about yourself.
Gentlemen, it's an honor and a privilege to be here. Thank you. I want to talk more about Gunbroker. I like the way that conversation was going.
Well, we'll have to talk offline because Shane, don't say this. Shane is first of all, he's a postman by trade. So they're not allowed to have guns.
That's
we
right.
Can't have guns.
And he's a divorcee, so he's got two strikes against him.
Oh boy.
Yeah, that's right. And he is in the quasi-entertainment business when he's not delivering the mail. And we all know the libs don't pack any heat. So
he's got to be
do that sometime.
So three strikes against me? Is that what you know?
God forbid one exercises their Second Amendment rights.
Well, this is what I was afraid I'd do. I'd accidentally talk about packaging up a bunch of stuff that you're not supposed to send through the mail and send it in the mail. And then they're probably spying on him. The OIG or something is probably spying on him. And then we'll be wrapped into some kind of a web.
Yeah, well, we have some kind of a mail.
Some kind of a mail deal. You know what I mean?
Listen, if they haven't arrested me by now, they're not going to. So
that's a good point.
They're probably
so shorthanded they can't.
We are. Did I? On a completely unrelated topic, did I tell you? So I'm about an hour north of Columbus, and we got a news release up here that one of the post offices in Columbus went in and did an audit 2 weeks ago. 34,000 pieces of undelivered mail and hundreds of packages that hadn't been scanned. Some neighborhoods.
How do they know that it's undelivered?
Well, because
does he get scanned on delivery?
Well, there's post. No. It was sitting around in the office. So it had been postmarked prior to getting there. And every piece of mail you get, first class mail, has a little barcode on the bottom.
I think we can thank the Unabomber for that, can't we?
I don't know who we can thank for that.
Yeah, we'll go into that here in a second if you want to know about it. Go ahead.
But that is more of that's not so much of a Unabomber is a way for big companies to track when their mail actually hits the customer and make sure that it does, because every so often we're asked to scan people's mail and it like registers or whatever. So anyway, they went in there and they found 34,000 pieces of undelivered mail because they had been getting complaints that some neighborhoods said they hadn't received mail in a month. And so all of us are sitting there in our office where everything gets delivered every day. And we're like, you know, they're going to complain to us because we sat an extra 3 minutes on our break, you know, because they track that too. And we're like, that office has delivered mail. The amount of mail that we get sometimes in a day, that was four times that hadn't been delivered. So like a week, so almost a week's worth of mail for our office was just sitting around in another office.
Now, like, does that fall on the local postmaster's responsibility?
Well, they said the kicker is that the supervisors, they felt that they were going to have to retrain the supervisors so they understood what their job responsibility was. It's like,
you know, hey, listen, I can't say our number what I was one, about to say.
Our number one job responsibility is delivering the mail. If they don't have that part down, then I don't know what kind of retraining is going to happen.
So, wow.
So yeah, it's Howler, you're right. We've had two really good workers quit in the past 3 months who were part-time, but they worked full-time because they were getting sent on Sundays to facilities that are delivering Amazon packages. The one town over here, Mansfield, had, you know, I mean, it's thousands of Amazon packages come in there on a Sunday, and they got to get delivered. So they're just making part-time people go over and work on Sundays. And, you know, people not wanting to work is one thing, but having to go on Sunday when you expect that to be at least your day off,
rest.
Yeah, is another thing. And when there's, but see, here's the thing: is all the old guys that are at the top of the pay scale. In fact, one of my best friends, he's still out delivering right now.
You get a Sunday right differential, don't you?
Oh my God! If you go work Sunday and you're at the top of the pay scale, and that might as well be 8 or 9 hours at $70-$80 an hour.
Wow. Right. Yeah, I was going to say, because I knew you get. Now, do you guys don't get night differential too? Do you?
Some places that, I mean, but you'd have to work over 10 hours to do that. They try not. I mean, some places do. We don't. We're just a small office. We don't usually go that late. But yeah. But that's why people then get shot on front porches.
Yep.
You know, that happens every night because you're out in a neighborhood at 9:30 at night and it's dark on somebody's porch. Well, a lot of those places don't ask questions. They shoot first and ask questions later. And
not sadly, to mention people who want to take boxes.
Yeah. So if you're, you know, how dumb is it? Nobody expects their mail at night. I mean, I've been out 7:30, 8 o'clock around Christmas, delivering packages, and people are like, "What are you doing? You could have just brought it tomorrow." We're like, "Yeah, we know that, but our bosses don't really care."
Don't shoot the messenger, guys.
Yeah, literally. But this isn't about me and the sorrow of the United States.
So, you know, tell us about how'd you get into making knives, Joey? And because I've seen some crazy knives you made. I guess they're crazy. I've never made one, but it looks like it's a pain. Or I mean, how do you do that?
Well, let me start by how I got into it. I've always been a creative guy. From the time I was little, drawing, painting, molding clay, writing music, you know, when I was in bands in high school and all that. And 2013 or so, I had an Instagram page and I was trying to do art. And I mean, I'm a decent artist, but I'm not good enough or anywhere near good enough to ever paint something that somebody would want to buy. And I was going through like a really bad part of my relationship with the mother of my children and just in a really bad place. And there was this kid who followed me on Instagram and he would always post these pictures of, he had folding knives and fixed blade knives. And some of them were really cool. And I was like, "Yo, where did you get that?" He was like, "Oh, this guy on Instagram made it for me." I'm like, "Wait, what do you mean he made it for you?" He's like, "Oh, he's got a little shop in his garage." I was like, "Get the hell out of here." So I got totally ate up with it, started watching all the YouTube videos I could watch, started hitting people up, asking annoying questions on Instagram, got like $1,000 together, bought some belts and a really basic shitty grinder and some steel, and made a lot of mistakes. But it turns out I was pretty damn good at it. And I, of course, bucked the system and didn't follow the trick. You know, there's a lot of... there's a lot of egos in knife making. There's a lot of the old school traditional guys who don't really appreciate the younger dudes like me who come in and just start doing things the way we want to. You know,
and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but
no, not at all.
Because I have a buddy of mine that's been in the knives since the late 80s, right? Yep. And he has got some knives that they purport to be worth a lot of money because
sure.
People made them.
Yep.
And that means shit to me because I was going to be a gunfighter, right?
Gotcha. Right?
And I don't, you know, we always hear those analogies, 21 feet or you know, if you're within 21 feet, the knife can beat you and stuff like that. But and the only thing I can equate to making a knife is we made a lot of, you know what a fish gig is?
Yep.
In the metal shop, not at my school, but the other school, a friend of mine ended up being the ag teacher down there, and they made some fish gigs and some not really spearheads. What's at the end of, is it a pike? What's at the end of a pole? Would that be like a pike?
Like a harpoon with a barb on it?
Yeah, kind of like, yeah, not only gigs for fishing, but then they made a couple to stab wild pigs with.
Yep.
So, or go frog, I mean, or guys, go frog gigging.
Maybe because they're high school kids and they don't know any better, they just go out there and because that other school had a not a kiln, what's it called? Furnace? Not a furnace.
Or for like
they had a thing
like a smelter, like
they had a forge.
Yeah, it almost looked like a above the ground fire pit that had an air blower. You know, had like a bellows on it that they could.
Yeah, it's a forge.
It's a what?
A forge.
Yeah, so they did some stuff, but they didn't know. You know, when you said traditional knife baking, these kids were high schoolers, so they didn't know they weren't supposed to do it like that. So. So you guys, new artists like you, knife artists, just kind of upset the, what do they call that nowadays? Not upset.
The establishment?
Yeah, no, I was thinking of something else. It's a goofy tagline I see in social. I'm not a good social media person. It's, you disrupted. You disrupted them, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say most of us newer guys. I mean, there are new guys who get into it who are all about all the technical. Every, you know, by the book, by the letter, and they just adhere to the strict, you know, doctrine of traditional knife making. And look, I respect that, but I like making things that look cool in the way I like doing them. And a lot of my work, I'm self-taught. You know, I would imagine if you took some of the most renowned knife makers out there who've been doing it for decades, if one of them came and watched me make a knife, one of them would probably have a heart attack, you know, because they'd be pulling hair out of their head. But that's just my process, and that's the way I do it. And, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of, when you see my work, you know it's mine. Like you can tell what my work looks like. And I'm very, very proud of that as a creative person. Cause let's be honest. I mean, knives are thousands and thousands of years ago. One of the first weapons we came up with was either a blunt object or a stick that you sharpened at the end. And there's only so many ways you can make a knife. It's got to have a point. It's got to have an edge. After that, they all pretty much serve the same functionality. So I like making my stuff look, when you see it, even if it didn't have my maker's mark on it, you're going to know it's an 03 Metalworks blade.
Now, I want to ask, because I have not seen any of this work, because yeah. I, you know, was totally taken by surprise. So I don't know a lot about this, but so what? So when you go into like design your knives, what's your design made? Like, do you do something with the blade, or do you do something with the part that's the handle? Like, I mean, what is unique and special and makes your stuff stand out? Like, how would somebody look at it and say, oh man, that's one by Joey Knuckles, man. I know it anywhere.
The way I finish my handles, they have a fairly distinctive profile, and the way I actually shape the handles and finish them, and a lot of the finishes that I put actually on the steel. I've got a couple of, I'm sure somebody else has done them, but I've never seen them. I've got some acid edge finishes that are very unique. I do some textured finishes that are very unique, and some of my overall just blade profiles, you know, like I'll do stuff freehand, just whatever's in my head. And then I've got my standby designs, that are all functional and purpose driven. And, I've had those for years, and just those profiles themselves, you just see them so much. And I've probably done, I don't know, since 2014, I've probably done close to 500-600 knives already. So, yeah, there's a lot of my work out there, and I'm probably not good at articulating it, but if you go to my Instagram page or my webpage and look at the, or my website and look at the gallery, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Now, what's your website? What's your Instagram? What, I mean, where we go?
So everything is 03 Metalworks. That's 03 and then Metalworks spelled out. Well, that's my website.
I got to look it up so I know, so mm-hmm. So I can ask some questions here.
Hey, and I'm assuming the 03, is that a spinoff, 0311, or what is that spinoff?
That's correct. 0311. For anybody who doesn't know, 03 is the first two numerical designators of the Marine Corps Combat Arms MOS. And, you know, you got 0311, which is a rifleman, 0331, which is a machine gunner, 0341, which is a mortarman, 51, which is assaults, and 52, which are tow gunners. And I got out of the Marine Corps in 96, and I just had 03 something in my head, whether it was going to be for art or if I was going to be a tattoo artist or whatever. And when I was trying to come up with a name for my knives, I was going through my old sketchbook, and I had a bunch of, like, 03 designs. I was like, that's it, 03 Metalworks.
Right. I like it.
I mean, this is, I'm looking, and this is some cool stuff. And I, you know, and this is not my, this is not my bag.
Well, I, you know what I'm saying? But this hold is on, cool. Shane. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking that we needed to, the From the Shadows has to have an official. We need to commission some kind of official knife or something. If the werewolf or the dog man or somebody comes,
a dagger. We need it. You need a
That's what I'm thinking. You know what I mean? That's what I was like thinking.
A ghost blade.
Hey, listen, these are cool. So these are all, you know, these aren't just for a collector to put up on a wall or in a box or anything. No, this is all practical stuff.
I want my stuff is all purpose driven, very practical. As far as, you know, handmade knives go, they're pretty damn affordable. And I want people to use my knives. I don't want them sitting on a shelf or in a safe or in a case. And that's why I don't do like super high polished finishes that take hours and hours of sanding, because you pay $800 for a knife with a finish like that, and nobody wants to go use it. You know, so
is this a meat cleaver I'm looking at?
Yes.
That is awesome. That is awesome because I'm looking at this one. It's got kind of like that. I don't know what kind of green you would call that, but that your customer must have placed it with some of their plate and cups. And it kind of looks, it's got that 1800s. Palette of colors there. Yeah, you know,
that's a recent one. That's a recent one I did for somebody on Twitter. She wanted Tiffany blue handles to closely match a set of, you know, kitchenware that she bought. And she took a great picture. The customer pictures are one of my favorite things of all time.
That is, man. And then you got spikes.
Yeah.
Holy crap. Now that's something holler right there. See? That's a spike for werewolf right there, or Dracula, vampire.
Yeah. You don't got to worry about a vampire if you got one of those, man.
Listen, this stuff is cool. I'm very intrigued now. And I, like I said, I'm not somebody who would even, think about
it. I like making stuff that looks really cool, man. You know, functionality first and foremost, but all right, now let's make it look cool.
So how long does it take you to make a knife like that?
Like
the meat cleaver or whatever. I mean, how long does it take you to do something like that?
My biggest problem right now, I won't say it's a problem. My biggest consumer of time is I work exclusively in stainless steel right now, and stainless steel is notoriously labor intensive to heat treat. So I send all my stuff out to be heat treated professionally to a place here in Pennsylvania. And the turnaround time, depending on how busy they are, could be anywhere from 3 to 6 weeks. So I don't count that in the time it takes to put something together. So from the time of profiling a blade to putting the initial bevel on it and getting it heat treated, I'd say you're probably looking anywhere from 12 to 24 hours, depending on the complexity, the finish, the detail of the handle materials, if it's split materials, and I got to get those lined up and glued together. So that's a good ballpark figure.
So you said stainless steel. I guess I didn't realize all these were stainless steel. I didn't realize you could, I call it patina, but it's not really not. When you put these designs in that stainless,
yep.
How do you do that? I mean,
there's, and I found this out by serendipity, by making a mistake. Knife makers use ferric chloride, which is a fairly weak asset to darken blades. And then it's kind of like gun bluing. And then you can either stonewash them, so it puts a texture on them, whatever. Well, one time I was like, why don't I get some Cerakote decals that they use to put like cool patterns on firearms and stuff. It's like, if I put those stickers on the steel, it'll protect the steel from the acid where the stickers are, and it'll etch the open areas. So I did that and it worked. I was like, oh, cool. Well, one time I forgot one of the knife blades in the acid for like 3 hours, and it gave it a pretty deep etch. Didn't screw it up. I took the sticker off and I started cleaning it and sanding it, and then I started buffing it. And I started getting the unetched areas to really shine, but it left that pattern in there, and it just looked really cool. And it's just something I started doing a lot because people really liked it, and that's how you get what you see there. And that
so you kind of discovered it by accident, by
absolutely. It was a mistake that I learned from, and now I got a new technique.
Hey, and a couple of these cleavers have like a Kydex holster with them. How do you make them too?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I've just got a Kydex press, which is basically two pieces of plywood with some heat-resistant foam that's got hinges on one side. You warm up your Kydex in I've got a shop toaster oven because it heats very uniformly. If you heat Kydex too much, it'll start to curl, so you got to find the sweet spot. Get it nice and soft. Get your blade in there. Close your Kydex press. Put a vise on it. Let it sit for about 10 minutes for it to cool off. Then you got to rivet it and shape it and all that. But yeah, it gives you a nice snug fit. And I like doing that for my bigger, a lot of my bigger culinary blades. Just if people want to put it in a pack and take it out to camp with them, you know, you don't want an open blade rolling around in your cap. You're either going to ruin your other gear or your hand when you reach in for it.
Right. Yeah. I'm telling you, dude, I'm almost, it's like me and Gunbroker sometimes. I like them all, right? How do you get them all? You know? And I'm not even a knife dude.
I'm looking at these knives and they're pretty, even though they're designed a lot differently, it's still just, it's a knife. Okay. Yep. So what is the craziest thing anybody's asked you to try and make that wasn't a knife?
That's a good question. I had a Marvel Comics freak hit me up and commission a Batarang. A Batarang, you know, Batman's like the boomerang shaped like a bat, and it's got, you know, points for the wings and all that.
Right.
He's going to build a shadow box. He bought like one of the Hollywood replicas of the mask, and he actually did a really, really, really good job. I mean, I'm not a huge Marvel guy, but I can respect the meticulous attention to detail. And he mounted this Batarang in a shadow box with the rest of this Batman stuff, and it came out really, really nice. That wasn't a knife, did not have an edge on it. I've also had, and this is an interesting one. I've had some people with anxiety disorders contact me. A lot of them apparently use like worry stones to channel like their nervous energy and stuff when they're feeling anxiety or whatever. And they had seen some of the work I do with copper, and I had a couple of them ask me like, can you find like a 1-inch diameter copper sphere and just hammer it, put a hammered texture on it? And they carried around in their pocket. I'd done like five of them. They carried around in their pocket, and they just kind of tumble it around in their hands when they're feeling anxiety, which is kind of rewarding to make something for somebody like that. When they're feeling kind of out of the loop, they reach for something that I made for them, and it gives them comfort. So that's, and you know, look, I'm typically an asshole, so you wouldn't expect me to say something like that.
Okay. But I confessed to being one last week, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I call that assaholic because you're trying to get over being an ass. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to get over it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I relapse, right? But the dude is still here.
Yep.
I just try not to let him come up. But you just don't know who's going to flip that switch. That's exactly my problem.
And you know, there are, and that's one of the perils of Twitter. There are I've gotten very good at just like writing people off and just ignoring idiots. But there are some types of people that just flip my switch. And that is why I am on my I'm trying to behave a lot these days because this is my fifth Twitter account.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They've banned me 4 times prior to this.
For what? Holy.
For memes, you know, for saying toxic.
A meme?
Yeah, like seriously. But here's the thing, though. There's a lot of these lefties who get into these DM rooms, and they will pick people and mass report them just because they don't like either their political opinions or whatever.
You say DM room, you mean just direct message? What's a DM room?
A direct message room where they'll have like 100 people in there, and they'll have.
Oh, I didn't know. What are those? I've never heard.
It's just a bunch of people in one DM room. All
I didn't know how to
Joey, don't explain to him how to get in one because you're just.
Well, see, I just now got to where I can click on the thing.
But what they will do is they'll keep a list of accounts that they don't like, and they'll say, "All right, who's on the hit?" And they've gotten me 4 times, so I try and play very nice. My block list is prolific. I block people because then they can't report you because they're not seeing your content, you know?
Mm-hmm. See, yeah, I just got to where I started listening. You know how they did them live? You know what they call, they call them spaces or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I listen to them like when I'm picking up my kids or like, you know, different things, especially like during football season, I really got into them because I would sit up and wait for the football practice to be over and I'd be listening to spaces, but I can't deal with them long-term because so, you know, they're like open for everybody, right? Yeah. And people raise their hand, they get in there, and they're just not very good speakers. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah.
And God bless them, their heart might be in the right place, and their mind knows exactly what they want to say, but they can't do it. You know what I mean? And after 2 or 3 or 4 of them, I'm just like, dude.
Dude, I know plenty of very nice people who annoy the living shit out of me just by virtue of the way they're built. And that's a problem with me. That's not their problem. So, you know, it's all good.
Interesting. Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't even know a DM room. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, just don't do it. Just stay out of it. Don't do it.
Yeah, I haven't been in a DM room in
Well, days. When you say DM, I keep thinking DM room like in a previous world I occupied, DM stood for defensive measures, and you were in a mat room, right? You're in a mat room going fighting somebody, right?
Gotcha.
And so when you said DM room, that's what I thought, you know. But anyway, go ahead. I don't know. Interesting. Wow. See, I learned something new all the time.
Yeah, so this is my fifth DM account, and now DM account, Twitter account. And now the incentive is because I've got my Joey Knuckles page and I've got O3 Metalworks, and I've got to play nice because I don't want to jeopardize O3 Metalworks.
Right. Sure.
Well, and you know, here's the thing. It's really not worth it to get into an argument with somebody you don't know.
It's not going to change anybody.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You're not going to change anybody's opinion, you know? And if we've gone through what we've gone through the last couple years, and everybody can stay civil with each, you know, I don't have the same views on a lot of stuff as even the Howler, sure. But we get along swimmingly.
Well, this is why I don't really engage with a lot of crazies on there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is I don't because, like crazies from either side of the aisle, to be honest.
Well, it is not even that, because, you know, I'm scared of about 2/3 of the people in this world. Right. And not necessarily that I need to be, but I don't want to say I am a dark person because I'm not a dark person, but I've been with some people that are very dark and have done bad things all around this world, sometimes for entertainment purposes, right? And when you've rode around with some hard, hard individuals, it spooks you because you don't know who that dude is, right? He might be the guy at Walmart pushing a cart in front of you. He may, you know what I'm saying? He may be, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I mean, I'm sitting here with AR-10 and 20 mags, 177 grain open tip match, and I'm a nice guy. What's a bad guy got?
Right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
A knife. A knife by Joey Knuckles.
Yes.
That's what he's got.
Yeah, right. That's right. I didn't even think about that. Hey, yeah, gold dagger. Hey, gold.
He's got a werewolf spike.
And it's a werewolf spike.
I just have my Hellcat and my Scorpion on hand tonight.
So that's exactly right.
I have a pen. I have a pen and a blank piece of paper. That's all I got. I don't know. You guys are really scaring me. You know? I mean, you guys are really scaring me. But I do though. I think it's awesome that you, I loosely call myself a creative person, but I think it's really incredible that you're able to do something that you really love and are obviously passionate about. And turn it into something that you can do. I don't even want to say as a job, because they always say if you do something you love, it's not really a job, you know. And I mean, I spoke earlier today to a guy who's going to be on one of the paranormal parts of our program, and he has been able to not have to go back to his IT job because he was an artist similar to you. Like he could do sculpting resin fit, and he started doing like Bigfoot resin figures and sculptures and stuff, and because it brings, and the best thing is it brings you joy making them, and you know that your customers and the people that ordered them, they're also going to have joy when they receive it and every time they look at it. And I think that's cool. I think the world would be a much better place if everybody got to do something they really
It saved my life, man. And to take that one step further, COVID was kind of a mixed blessing for me. And look, it was really shitty. Nobody likes being locked down and all that, but I tried to maximize, you know, I was lucky to be able to work full time the entire time. I'm an IT guy. I've been doing IT for a long time. I've been working at this job for quite a few years. So I'm a known commodity. But every night I was still living with my ex, my kids. I didn't know if there was going to be food riots or whatever. So I wanted to be there to take care of them. But what I did was I made a plan. I was like, look, if we're going to be locked down, I'm going to bust my ass every night after work in that shop. And I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can and pay off the second mortgage on this house so I can turn it over to my ex. She can take it over, refinance it, just give it to her. And then once that's done, I'll be able to take out a VA loan and buy my own place in Pennsylvania. I'm only an hour away from them, right down 84. So I really made the time locked down. I made it count. To take that one step further, now that things are kind of dwindling down, I don't want to go back to commuting 5 days a week. I don't. You know, I don't want to do that anymore. I got a new boss now who's kind of an asshole, and I don't want to schlep every day. I want to be my own boss. So,
because you know, at the end, the only thing you have is time, and when that runs out, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
That is where it's at.
And that's why I made O3 Metalworks an official company this past February, because I was like, you know what, I wasn't ready. Now I'm ready, because you know, I don't want to go back to doing that. So, hopefully over the next 12 months, I'll be able to fully make that transition. But
I got to be honest with you. I think that is part of the reason why there's not a lot of people out there in the workforce, because they figured out the same thing you figured out that, look, I've got all this time. I figured out something I really can do and make a living at. And like the Howler said, all you got is time, and you might as well make the most of it and enjoy it. And I got to be honest, going to work and punching a clock and serving hamburgers, or even though we need people to do that.
Sure.
That doesn't sound like fun to me. I mean, I wouldn't want to go back and
especially and after over 20 years in the private sector of doing IT work. And the flip side is also, I think this opened a lot of people's eyes that a lot of jobs can be done remotely. I mean, look, let's not, if you can't manage yourself, if you're not disciplined, if because you're home, you're just going to be screwing off all day. No, teleworking is not for you. But I got 2 cell towers built during a pandemic under budget and on time, you know? So it's all about having the self-discipline to take pride in your work. And I just proved to myself that I don't need to judging people's productivity by whether how long, how often their ass is in a chair every day. That's an antiquated way to look at things. Some things, obviously, you got to be there. If you're flipping burgers, you can't do that remotely. I can remote into every system I'm responsible for. So, you know, just kind of open my eyes a little bit.
Sure. Well, and I think, you know, when Shane just said something about people being gone, the good people found a way, right? That's sure. why I'll, that's yeah. why there's no good help out there.
Absolutely.
You know, I had somebody tell me over the weekend that essentially what he told me is he's got a 50-year-old woman that could outwork every 20-year-old he's hired this year. And he was trying to figure out, is it something about a generational thing or is that a, you know, and he said he's had two people quit before 10 o'clock on their first day. And I said, what do you mean? He said, they just look at you and say, this ain't for me and leave.
Yep. A lot of people shit working hard, man.
They should have figured that out.
Before. You know, that's what he told me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that goes back also to the way a lot of people are raised. You know, I mean, I have had a job since I was 14 years old.
Me too. You know? Yeah, there you go.
So you got to work. And, you know, I'm also a little biased. I went in the Marine Corps at 19. So I've been self-sufficient for quite a number of decades now. I need to remind myself that not everybody's been in the military. Not everybody's a Marine. Not everybody had that regimented 6 years.
Right.
But still, there's a lot of people who never served in the military who are more disciplined than I am. So, you know,
just now I got to ask, and you know, everybody that comes on that's a veteran,
yep.
You know, number one, thank you for your service. Definitely. I mean, you made it easy on us, chickens that don't have the guts to, you know,
Shane couldn't do it. Hey, Joey, I'm going to tell you, first of all, he had his high school girlfriend knocked up and he was a Division I football star out in Ohio. So that's why he
did Johnny Utah over here.
That's exactly. That's right. That's right. Johnny Utah. That's exactly right. He lost his window there. That's the only problem.
But anyway, since, you know, we've established that I could not do it, but also, but anyway, I always got to ask, so what, because from the paranormal side of me, some of our best stories come from veterans who either were on a base somewhere where there was a known, you know, Bigfoot, or somebody was, had something to do with, you know, with UFOs, or they were overseas, and there's a lot of crazy stuff.
Hey, he's been to Okinawa, so if there's a haunted place, it would be one of the, it'd be at one of the islands, I would think.
So I got to ask, anything like super creepy or that just kind of like you couldn't answer, or you know what I'm saying? Like you couldn't explain ever happened over there that was not military related?
The only thing that could be, well, two quick stories. One, I believe we went to Vegas for the weekend and we were driving back late on a Sunday night. It was like probably 3 a.m. And we're all packed into my buddy's truck. A lot of us were like half asleep and we woke up because the driver screamed, locked up the brakes, and he was just clutching the steering wheel. He's like, he was right in the middle of the road. He was right in the middle of the road. And we're like, who? What? He's like, I don't know. Some old dude was just standing in the middle of the road, and then he wasn't there. And we looked around. We didn't know if we hit somebody or what. We looked around for 45 minutes, and my buddy Shane, he swore. It was this old back road cutting back through San Bernardino Valley. And he's 3 a.m., he said this old man with long gray hair was crossing the street and he almost hit him and then he was just gone. I was half asleep. We had drank all weekend. I can't say it was anything paranormal, but that was weird. Like, that was creepy. Looking around with a flashlight.
I would say so.
Pretty creepy. Now, the other one, I was stationed in 29 Palms, California, which is it's the Marine Corps Air Ground Combat Center. And the thing of distinction about 29 Palms is it's where everybody comes to train and drop big bombs because it's on the edge of the Mojave Desert. There's just so much land out there where you can drop big ordnance. Well, there's an area out there called Blacktop. And we go out there, we'd be working 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time doing operations and all that. And at night, let me backtrack. That area is very close to Amboy, where Charles Manson and his followers kind of hung out way back in the day before all the helter skelter shit. And at night, sometimes you'd look out over Blacktop and you'd see like little flickering lights, like campfires and shit out there. Now there ain't supposed to be anybody out there. There's live military operations and shit going on. And there's some weird fucking people out there with campfires doing who God knows fucking what. So yeah, that's pretty creepy.
So you think that there are people really out there camping and that those lights aren't something else, maybe?
I mean, I can't say what they are. And again, back then, I mean, we had binos, but you know, you couldn't really tell, but there's definitely something out there. The most logical explanation would be people out there building fires or whatever, but who knows, man? Who am I to say what the hell it was? But definitely creepy. I don't know if you've ever been out in the high desert late at night. It's eerie quiet, and you're so far away from any light pollution. It's just very dark, and the sky's full of stars. And then you're supposed to be the only ones out there, and you see little lights flickering out there. You're like, yo, what the fuck, man? Yeah, well, we're Marines. We're armed and shit. I'm like, yo, what the fuck, man?
I've heard lots of stories on, especially on shooting, like, you know, that's not a shooting range, but it's a range where there's stuff, you know, you're talking about. There's bombs and people are
unexploded ordnance.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, those other military, there's like nobody in their right mind would be running across a shooting range while we're shooting. And so they can, you know, they're like, it can only be either somebody that's totally not in the right mind or something that doesn't care or doesn't know that they're not, you know.
It's funny you mentioned Okinawa. I did not go, but.
I thought you'd been out there. I'm sorry.
No, I've been to Okinawa twice. But my buddies put together a trip. They're like, yo, we're going to go exploring.
The tank farm and everything.
Underground caves where there's a lot of old Okinawan burial grounds. And I'm like, yo, I'm not fucking going out there with you, motherfucker. They got pictures of them. They found skulls and stuff. I was like, yo, no, not me, man. Nope.
That's some bad juju.
Yeah, no, not for me, man. No, I went out in town and got some yakisoba and I was nice and safe. Like Okinawan teriyaki noodles, and you can get your choice of like chicken or beef or whatever. Really, really good drunk food.
There you have it. You know, I started to say, Shane, when you said, well, you were in the Marine Corps, did you see anything you can't explain? And I wanted to say, dude, anybody in government service has seen a lot of stuff they can't explain.
That's true. I saw some stuff in Thailand that I can't explain as well.
Well, that's a whole different podcast that we should not.
Yeah, this is the clean one. This is the clean one. That's right.
Uh-huh. So the other thing that we kind of discussed before you got on, I want to hear a little bit more about your music background and that you were in a heavy metal documentary. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I let's see. I found I grew up in the 80s, and the 80s were an amazing, amazing, amazing time to be a heavy metal fan. In the early 80s, it was still all like the new wave of British heavy metal, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest, the older bands like Saxon and Raven and Angel Witch. And then Metallica like released Kill 'Em All. And it was like thrash metal, American thrash metal. And that changed the entire scene. So you had Metallica, Megadeth, then Anthrax, Slayer, that whole Bay Area thrash scene, Anthrax from Brooklyn. And it was a huge part of my life and continues to be to this day. I started going to concerts, started playing bass guitar when I was 15 because I wanted to be Steve Harris from Iron Maiden or Cliff Burton from Metallica. And I was in a couple of garage bands, played a couple of talent shows, but, you know, nothing crazy. Then I joined the Marine Corps, came back. But around 2005, maybe 2006, I was on a heavy metal forum where people just shitpost, and kind of like Twitter, but back when it was just like up the days of forums, when you log into a forum that covered whatever topic you're interested in. Somebody posted a link. They're like, hey, there's this dude, Sam Dunn. He's an anthropologist. He's got a degree, but he also happens to be a huge heavy metal fan, and he's shooting a documentary. You know, up until that point, a lot of the heavy metal documentaries were very tongue in cheek. It was a bunch of drunk teenagers listening to loud, you know, raucous music. He was actually looking at it from a point of view of anthropology. What is it about heavy metal music that is, why is the community so drawn to it and so tight? He wanted to understand that from a human perspective. And he went from the very beginning and interviewed everybody, Ronnie Dio, Rob Zombie, dudes from Metallica, Ozzy, the whole Norwegian death metal scene, interviewed everybody. So they said they're interviewing people. You submit your bio, send it to this email, and if they're interested, they'll get back to you. I typed up my bio and sent it to them, and I got an email like a week later, like, hey, come down to BB King's. We're going to have like a couple of hundred people down there. We'll put you on camera in one of the stairwells and ask you some questions and see how you do, and we'll go from there. So I get down there, and literally it is like all fucking posers, like all chicks in like tight leather pants and dudes with, they got to make sure they got their long hair and earrings. And I'm like, yo, what the fuck is this? And Sam comes in and he's like looking around and he's kind of like shaking his head because he's like a death metal guy. He's not really into like Motley Crue and all that glam shit. And he interviewed a bunch of them, and he talked to me, put me on camera. And he's like, look, I still got a lot more people to interview, but unless one of them knocks my socks off, I'm probably going to go with you because you got a military background. You're like a real fan. You're just wearing jeans and a T-shirt. There's no gimmicks. No, you know, you didn't dress up for this. You just came down as you are. And a week later, he's like, yeah, we're going to go with you. So we set up an appointment. They interviewed me down. And this is actually kind of funny. They interviewed me. You know those inner city basketball courts that have the chain link fences around them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like the sun is just going down. They've got lights and cameras. And it's Sam and his two assistants. And they've got the cameras on. And there's a crowd gathering because they think I'm somebody famous. So they're asking me these questions. And I can hear people out. I hear people talk. They're like, yo, that's Fred Durst. That's Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit. Yo,
that's Fred Durst. They thought you were Fred Durst.
I'm like, you look like him? I'm not Fred Durst, you motherfuckers.
Yeah, but hey, if you're what inner city are you in? We all look the same, you know.
It's New York City.
And we all look the same.
You know, Fred Durst
has to a heavy metal guy being called Fred Durst is probably an insult. I mean, that's an insult.
Exactly. And let me caveat that in case Fred Durst hears it. Fred Durst is actually a really cool guy. He caught a lot of heat because his fan base turned out to be all the meathead jock motherfuckers that he hated growing up, in an ironic twist of fate. And everybody just assumed that Fred was like them, but he hated those motherfuckers. So I just wanted to throw it out there. Fred, you're all right in my book.
Well, Fred's, and who knows, he might be. But I wanted to ask you. So you're heavy metal now. Do you remember a rock group from Ohio called The Gods?
The name sounds very familiar, but I can't picture them.
It's like I think their lead singer, his name was Eric Moore. Okay, and they were hard. Rock and roll,
like heavy and, for the time, or just heavy in general?
Heavy in general, I believe. Okay. And the Howler will appreciate this. So my buddy David Wade,
who Howler knows,
and he's, you know, he writes country with me and stuff, and used to manage David Allen Co. And he somehow got a hold of Eric Moore, the lead singer of The Gods.
Oh shit.
And And he just died. He just recently died, and he wanted to write. He's like, hey, you want to write a song? So Eric Moore had this song. So he wrote the last song with Eric Moore called God's on High. And they're trying to figure out. And then Eric ended up dying before he could even really hear the finished product.
Oh, that's horrible, man.
But yeah, they're trying to figure out how the management and stuff, how to release the song. And I don't know if Eric actually sang it, but he co-wrote it. And I know there's a finished version of it. And so they're trying to figure out how to package it, and put it out there for the guy. Cause they were like, crazy. Like he sent me articles from, cause it was a little bit before my time. I think they were really big in the '70s and, not top 40 at all. You know, they were just heavy metal, heavy rock. So I didn't know if that was somebody that was in your, because I know some rock and roll people, and they're like, oh, the Gods are great, but nobody knows them. You know what I'm saying? Nobody.
Yeah. Hey, you know, there's a lot of like hidden gem bands like that that are, you know, mainstream success doesn't necessarily equate to being talented. I mean, you look at pop culture and there's your answer right there, you know?
Right.
and Howard, you'll like this. Wade just also wrote a song with the lead singer of Looking Glass.
Get out of here.
I kid you not. The lead singer of Looking Glass, it's Elliot Lurie. Was the lead singer, and I don't know how Wade loves old school stuff, and because we do some stuff with some older country artists, and he just loves like Brandy was one of his favorite songs, and he goes, you know, I saw they were it was like some concert, some throwback concert, and he goes, I just reached out to him, and yeah, they finished a song. I heard it last a couple weeks ago. They're trying to pitch it.
Thing.
It is.
I'm a huge heavy metal fan, but I love my dad was not a great guy, but one of the things I really truly appreciate about growing up was all the old country music that I got to listen to growing up riding in a car with my dad. And if you look at my Spotify playlist, I got a bunch of classical music on there too. Bach and Vivaldi and all that stuff. So
I gotta be honest, picturing you molding steel into knives to classical music, that kind of is kind of a cool image. Like,
yeah, man.
Ding, ding, ding. I mean, I can see it. That's
and fantastic. one of the things my guitar teacher, my bass teacher, he's a brilliant, brilliant musician. One of the things that he taught me way early on is the parallels between really good aggressive thrash metal and classical music. Like if you took Bach and put it on electric guitars, it'd be metal. Believe it or not, it's just really? the way it's delivered and the amazing way it's played. There's a lot of parallels to the actual music theory behind all of it, which I still appreciate to this day.
Well, I got to say one thing, Howler. I don't know if our normal fans tuning in are going to be like, this went so far into left field, we don't even know what, are they going to be like, this is one of the most interesting discussions these guys have had, because I've learned so much about some subjects that I had no clue about. I got to be honest.
That's a beautiful thing. That's what life is.
I was trying to think of that old cliche. What do they say? People that fans that matter won't mind, and those that mind won't matter. I don't know, but I don't know. You know, I don't know. I will see. I'm sure. You know what? I hate to say it, just like I said last one, but I could see us having him on again.
I would definitely come back on.
We had an Undertaker last week, and a funeral director. Get,
yeah, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah,
you know, it's funny you mention that, because one of the things that and look, we're on a podcast and I'm going to bring up Joe Rogan. But yeah. One of the things I love about Joe Rogan's podcast is all of the interesting people that he has turned me on to by virtue of them being on his show.
Right.
Guys like Graham Hancock, who's like an ancient civilization researcher. And he was on Rogan's podcast one time. I sat there for 3 hours with my jaw on the ground, just could not stop listening to it. It was so interesting. So to hear you say that is very rewarding and gratifying.
Oh yeah. I gotta be honest. I don't think that anybody listening probably had any idea about knife making and what it took and that it was really something somebody could really just do, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm amazed. I really am. And I mean, I know there's a blacksmith in our town who does some cool stuff like that. And it just is, it's such a form of artwork. And I think once people go check, you know, because I know there's going to be people go check out your Instagram and your website and they see it, they're going to be like, wow, that is some really cool stuff.
Yeah. And what was that again? One more time before we slide on out of here.
So o3metalworks.com is my website. I'm o3metalworks on Instagram, o3metalworks on Twitter. And even on TikTok, I do videos with music of just blades as I finish them. That's O3 Metalworks as well.
Oh, now that's good. Now I'm going to have to go check that out.
I was going to say TikTok, dude. I was going to hang up.
Oh, man. You know? Oh, man. Well, Joey, man, it's been fantastic having you on. I'm so glad the Howler reached out.
You know, like I said, he was just out of kind of left field. I threw that out. You know, it was one of those, I don't know. What was the thing, Joey? It said, who would, if you could spend an hour on the talking.
Yeah, it was just, you just threw it out there and said, hey, who there was one of those things. Podcast?
Somebody had posted a thing that said, if you could spend an hour, and it was like a park bench or a pew or something in front of, if you could spend an hour talking to somebody, who would it be? And, you know, people were opining, just pick your Napoleon, you know, right. Hitler, Churchill. People, there was a string of them that was real high-minded people, and I got to thinking, well, first of all, I was going to say Washington, Lincoln, and what would I have in – I was worried about it being a language breakdown, and then if you told them, if you somehow convinced them that you were from the future, right, you're sitting there with George Washington, and you're from the future – and he asks you how it's going. I mean, what would I tell him?
Exactly.
It would
depend on when you spoke to him and told him, and he'd be like, "Yeah, I'm not gonna set
right.
this
so
up."
I mean, threw it all out. I picked five people from my Twitter feed, and then I said, "And who wants to be on?" I think I said who wants to be on it or something like that. And Joey here is the only person that stepped up. There was one of them that joked around a little bit. One of them anyway, but
I think people kind of like, I know I've talked to people that are big fans of ours. They're like, oh no. I think it's kind of scary, but they're looking at it from a different point of view. I mean, like right now, it's just three of us talking. There's nobody listening to us right now.
I mean, you guys are very easy to talk to. I will give you that. I mean, and that's a huge, that would be a huge concern. Because, you know, some people aren't great conversationalists, and why the hell would you be doing a podcast if you weren't a great conversationalist? But you guys are very easy to talk to. I feel like I'd just be myself and just shoot the shit and just go from there.
Right.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Yeah. But, so yeah, everybody go out and check. It's O3 Metalworks.
Correct.
O3 Metalworks. So everybody go out and check yeah. Joey's workout on that on Instagram.
Not only check it out, buy one of them spikes in case a werewolf comes or whatever else.
Better give Dracula hell when he shows up.
Hey, look, I hope enough listeners around the world do order something. I mean, I think that would be fantastic. I hope they do order something and keep you busy to the point where
you can tell that
new boss I got a spike.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Hey, what's that song David wrote? What did he write? Take this job.
Take this job and shove it. Yeah. Oh yeah.
I appreciate the hell out of you gentlemen for having me on. This has been a
well, I we'll stop the recording now, and then we'll have to go, you know, have a after the show discussion, which everybody's gonna be like, hey, why didn't you keep it? You know, I think but hey, on that note, we appreciate you coming on, and look, I can't wait to watch your Instagram page and see what you make next.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.